the underground bunker of the Civitas Studio in Raleigh, North Carolina, it's Civitalk with your hosts, Brooke Medina and Ray Nothstein. We're here to connect culture with civics, making it relevant to your daily life. And dare we say, existence at a time where too many are triggered and offended. So, relax, but buckle up, and let's wade into the deep end. What's really happening in your old North State?
Welcome to another edition of Civitalk. I'm here with my co-host, Brooke Medina. We're going to talk riots, public safety, law and order, the rule of law. We will discuss a little bit of the conventions, both Democrat and Republican Party, Cooper's budget that has been proposed. He just released it yesterday, which will be last week if you're listening to this, and just some content on the Civitas website. Brooke, how's it going?
It's going good. I'm glad to be here. It has been another week in paradise. Mighty hot out here. Kind of excited about fall coming around the corner, but doing
I've noticed the weather's cooled off a little bit, like because we always go for a family walk in the evening, and it's been a little bit cooler lately. So that's been a positive with all the negative news going on. That's been a real positive, I think.
Yeah, I mean, you learn to really appreciate this weather, especially, I'm sure, for our friends that are down south a little in the Gulf Coast area, because they just kind of escaped what could have been an even worse hurricane. Hurricane Laura didn't do as much damage as it looks like people were anticipating, so that's good. But I'm so grateful for the cooler evenings as well.
Absolutely, and yes, very thankful that hurricane, which was very scary. Somebody, I myself was a Katrina evacuee, went back to the Mississippi Gulf Coast, and for anybody who knows those pictures of Hiroshima after the atomic bomb was dropped on Japan in World War II, that's what the Mississippi Gulf Coast really looked like in certain areas, especially along the waterfront. It looked like an atomic bomb had been dropped, so it's just a good feeling and a good omen, perhaps, that you know, things weren't as bad as what could have been. It didn't land as a Category 4 or 5, and the winds quailed down some. And I know that there was, sadly, one death where a tree fell on a house and a 14-year-old girl was killed. And right before that, I think the governor of Louisiana was just talking about how it was a miracle that nobody had been killed, but there had been a reported death. So it is fortunate, though, there was a less bloodshed from that hurricane. And you know what we're going to talk about, kind of transitioning from hurricanes to something a little less like a hurricane? Our breakfast. We're going to talk about breakfast foods to launch this out off, Brooke.
Ooh, I like food, and I like talking about food.
Yeah.
So this one, perfect.
I want to know, because I'm not really a breakfast person, so I'm going to lean on you here, although I do like I'm still on a low key keto diet, because I still drink a lot of beer, but I haven't been eating too many breakfast foods, at least like pastries or French toast, pancakes. I'm not really a huge breakfast person to begin with, but I want to hear from you. What are the best breakfast foods? What motivates you to have a good day, to kind of kick off your day? Because we used to be told, I saw this article recently, Brooke, that breakfast actually doesn't matter as much as we think of. Of course, all this stuff is cyclical, because you remember like 80s and 90s, you know, breakfast was the key to having a healthy metabolism and having a good day. But then I saw an article that breakfast doesn't really matter that much. But I want to still hear from you. What is the best breakfast food?
Oh, wow. Now that, I don't think there's actually a correct answer for this. But I will tell you a few different things. I've got musings and thoughts on breakfast. And although I'm not in the camp of breakfast is the most important meal of the day, like I will skip breakfast from time to time and I'll do just fine. But I still have feelings about the options that are available and the options that I like to make available to my family. So on the weekends, I will often make my kids and my husband homemade Belgian waffles. And so, or I'll do buttermilk pancakes, homemade, of course, or chocolate chip banana muffins. So I am a pastry sort of breakfast person for the most part, but oftentimes if I'm able to, I will also round it out with some really cheesy scrambled eggs and maybe sausage patties. So I feel like as long as you've got your carbs, your proteins, your extra proteins with meat, the dairy from the cheese, like, what could go wrong It all is just so good.
I used to, now that I'm on a keto diet, I don't do this, but I used to eat a banana, maybe a half a banana, and that was it. And like a shot of whiskey.
That's so boring, right?
A shot of whiskey to wake me up and a half a banana.
Oh, would you have whiskey too?
Nah, I mean, come on.
Oh.
You don't think.
I was about to say, that's quite the breakfast.
No, I mean, every once in a while, but not really. I don't want to put that on live. I don't want to put that on a recording, if that's true.
That's funny. Okay. Well, actually, speaking of whiskey, though, I want to say something about whiskey for a moment. So we're going to put a pin in our breakfast discussion. And I was at a friend's house the other day, and I tried two new kinds of whiskey this weekend, and they were delicious. One was called Blonde.
Is that from Asheville? Blonde?
Yes.
Yes, I have that in my house. It's very good, although I will say this. Men pick on other men for liking blondes because they're not as – because they're a little bit smoother and, I guess, lighter. So you're not considered as manly if you like a blonde. But I like it.
Oh, yeah. It's really good. And, I mean, I can handle strong whiskey, but I could drink a lot more blonde than I could, you know, obviously like a really peaty Ardbeg. So I tried Blonde, loved it. And then this other one, which was a very unique flavor that I can just taste right now as I'm explaining it, is Balcones Baby Blue, which is corn whiskey.
Hmm.
Have you ever tried corn whiskey?
I have. It's okay. I mean, I like different kinds. I mean, having lived in Kentucky for like 5.5 years, maybe 6 years almost, I'm a big fan of Woodford Reserve. And of course, there's some other great bourbons in Kentucky, but Woodford's always been kind of one of my favorite, very smooth, and just the horse country around Kentucky is beautiful, and Woodford just reminds me of that and has that kind of great scent and taste. So
mm-hmm. Yeah, there's some good ones. I don't know if I've had the like Kentucky stuff, but anyways, I had to deviate from our breakfast discussion, and we probably should hang that up anyways, but oh, I've got some great breakfast recipes. I actually might put it in the show notes. There's one particular easy to make breakfast casserole that I like to make whenever we have company over. And it's like croissant rolls with sausage and cream cheese and regular cheese. And so it's a really easy one that has always been a crowd pleaser. But let's talk about, I guess, less unsavory things, but something really, really important to the electorate nonetheless. And that's the increasing law and order discussion that we're having across the nation and across the state. So what are some of your thoughts? I know that we've got some riots that we've been monitoring coming out of Wisconsin.
Let me ask you something, Brooke. Did you see the comments by Don Lemon on CNN about the rioting and looting?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I just was interesting. Obviously, a lot of people are making a big brouhaha about this on social media. But Don Lemon was, I think he was with, it wasn't the governor of New York, Cuomo. It was the other Cuomo, I guess, Chris Cuomo. Yeah, they were having a discussion. And Lemon said that looting and rioting needs to stop because it was hurting the polls, you know, for basically Democrat candidates and specifically Joe Biden. And I just thought that was interesting. And a lot of people have already pointed this out. But, you know, he was kind of making the case that this only really mattered in a political context. And I think one of the biggest disappointments in all of this, Brooke, has been, you know, we haven't had a unified voice. And whatever your like feelings are about Black Lives Matters or some of the police abuses out there, or just police departments in general, you know, looting and rioting can't be tolerated. And so it would be nice if we had lawmakers who would stand up and you in a unified voice say this is not okay. I mean, we've seen many of the videos on social media. There's been several from Kenosha recently, Wisconsin, that have depicted people who've had family-owned businesses, some of them minority-owned businesses, that have been absolutely destroyed. And you know, it's not okay to say, well, insurance will cover that, because insurance doesn't cover everything. And there's often deductibles, and it's not easy to destroy a business, whether it's a car dealership or you know, art warehouse, and just say, well, insurance covers that. It doesn't really matter. And it was just interesting to me to see his comments because, you know, society has become so politicized. His comments were all about the political nature of this and not really about the individual or the people who are sacrificing and struggling and the average taxpayer out there who's, you know, trying to make his ends meet and hire people and give people, you know, his own employees a chance at a better life. And this was all just about politics, Brooke, when he said basically, hey, we got to stop this maybe because it's hurting, you know, Democrats in the polls.
Right. Well, this is, I mean, it totally disregards the principle behind it, which is respect for fellow citizens, dignity of, you know, private property, the rule of law, just all of those things. And everything is just instead filtered through this lens of politics. But this is the nature of it. And I think the closer we get to the election, the worse it's going to get. However, I say all of that, but I also want to say that if the Democrats get their act together on law and order merely because they want to win an election at this juncture, if it saves lives and saves property, fine, sure, play politics with it right now. Just get your act together. Let's protect American citizens. And then, you know, we'll worry about the motives later. But I mean, either way, whether they're motivated by things that are good and pure or just winning the next election, really what counts at the moment, I would say immediately, is just making sure that people are protected. I mean, we've already lost lives up there in these riots, and it's a shame. In Raleigh, here in North Carolina, and Charlotte, they're no stranger to these riots and looting that have been happening. And I know you've written on the growing crime in Charlotte. My husband and I were talking the other day in a trail that I have ran on by myself before. There was a person that was raped and murdered on that trail the other day here in Raleigh.
I saw that. Yeah, it was very disturbing. And then wasn't there a bicyclist that was attacked?
I believe so. There's just been an increase.
There was a bicyclist on the Raleigh Greenway or whatever it's called that was attacked and beaten to death.
There was a 17-year-old girl leaving her work at Bojangles in Raleigh and was murdered. I mean, I've got a 17-year-old daughter that works in food service. As soon as I heard that, I mean, she and I had a long discussion, as well as my husband, and we just schooled her. And once again, we've already talked to her about being aware of her surroundings. She's got pepper spray, things like that. But even so, I mean, it's unnerving.
Yeah, for young women out there especially, but for everybody, really, situational awareness is key. I took a criminal justice class in college, and the professor did a good job of, and I've always been this way, I think, in general, because I have an observer personality, but just having situational awareness in anything you're doing and anywhere you're going when you're out in public, I think, is important and is a key component. I think that's true even before all these riots happened. It's just having some situational awareness about your surroundings and who's around you, and if there's any suspicious activity, just be aware of that. And obviously, we hope and pray for just safety of young women in this society, especially because it is heartbreaking to see violence. I mean, you know, in writing this article that I just finished, I mentioned the St. Louis former sheriff David Dorn, a black individual who is well loved in his community, but he was 77 years old, and I guess he was providing security for a friend's pawn shop. And I know this is a story that went viral, and I think his wife spoke at the GOP convention. But you know, he was trying to stop looting at a store, and he was shot in the head, and it was streamed live on Facebook, all over a TV. Brooke, I mean, to kill somebody over a television, it's just, you know, it's unreal to me.
Horrific.
That,
yeah,
you know, it's horrific, the disrespect for life out there. And you know, there's many problems for this crime wave and this upsurge in looting and violence. And I understand that, but it's just heartbreaking to see someone lose their life over basically a TV that probably cost $150, $200, $250, you know, and it's just right. Heartbreaking to think about that. And so you're right. I think one of the tensions too is in many of these urban environments, when you see the looting, the rioting, the chaos, is there are many like liberal mayors and progressive mayors and governors increasingly that are progressive that I think are letting some of this happen because of politics, because they want to appease some of their base in these urban environments and aren't willing to crack down on some of this unruliness and stuff. And so it's hard to watch. It really is. And I know that, you know, Trump's playing politics with this too. I mean, I'm not saying he allows it to happen, but he promotes some of this stuff in his own narrative because he thinks maybe it helps him. So it's not just a GOP Democratic thing. Both sides are playing politics to some degree, and it's just unfortunate to see because people are losing their lives, people are losing their livelihoods, people are losing businesses that they poured their entire capital and money into. And this is an increasing problem that we need not only to be aware of, but we really need to solve, because we can't have a harmonious society. We can't have a society that's built on something more if we don't solve this. If we don't say that, hey, this is not going to be tolerated. And we saw this in Raleigh as well when after George Floyd's killing, we saw people go out and destroy businesses downtown, and then the mayor, but the police chief basically told the law enforcement to stand back. Don't get involved. And I think her inclination was a good one, you know, to save lives. She didn't want to threaten the lives of law enforcement, but to kind of just let law and order just collapse to that degree was very discouraging.
Yeah, well, and it's if we're afforded any right, it's the right to life. And to vest your trust and your safety into local law enforcement and then have their leadership basically tie their hands on that front. And you've maybe counted on law enforcement to step in when they need to. And so you haven't weaponed up enough to be able to protect yourself. Like, I mean, it's just, it's they're horrific conditions that failure of leadership has really created in a lot of urban areas in particular. And the, you know, the rural areas have their problems too. I mean, there's definitely no romanticizing that side of things either. They're different issues. Oftentimes the opioid epidemic and poverty in ways that maybe just aren't as prevalent in some urban areas, in some quarters of some urban areas. But either way, this is definitely going to be an election issue. Back to Don Lemon's comment, we're seeing it in the North Carolina polling for sure. Mm-hmm. I think 80-something percent said that this was going to be crime and public safety were going to be issues that they were going to be taking into account as they enter that voting booth in November. But also, a majority of voters said that they have favorable views and opinions of the words law and order and Black Lives Matter. So I think this is another important thing that we need to hone in on, is that these don't have to be in tension with one another. People like their police departments. 84% of those that we polled across the state like their local law enforcement. But they also do believe that we need to ensure that we are treating our justice system as fair and just. And so even if it is just maybe in your particular district, maybe it's not in other areas of the country. And so the perception is that we've got a rampant criminal justice problem. And in some ways we do. You visited some prisons around here. My husband worked in that field for a while. And, you know, there's definitely room for improvement. But that doesn't mean that we're just going to open up the prisons and let violent criminals out into society either. So there needs to be some good leadership on this front all the way around.
Yeah, I can't really add any of that. I think you're exactly right on. So let's transition. Is there anything, have you watched any of this convention coverage? Because I honestly haven't, but I have watched some of the clips that Trump has tweeted out. And just in general, I've watched a few. I did watch Madison Cawthorn, who's running in the North Carolina, I think it's the 9th congressional district.
11th,
yeah. Ninth has been in the news so much. But yeah, Mark Meadows, his former seat, who's now the White House chief of staff. I did notice, I was going to tweet about it, then I noticed everybody already noticed it, that Madison, he said that James Madison had signed the Declaration of Independence. And immediately I knew that Madison had never signed the Declaration of Independence. He wasn't part of the delegation. But, you know, that was a mistake by him. So that was really the only speech I watched because it was North Carolina. And I did watch some of Clarence Henderson's talk, which I thought was good. But outside of that, I haven't really watched much convention coverage on the Democratic side or the Republican side. So I don't know if you had any thoughts or just in general. I have noticed a few people said that the Republican convention was a little bit better orchestrated.
Okay.
You know, just from a kind of a from a film production stance, and you know, I think that you're using a lot of the Morning Again America themes from Ronald Reagan's 1984 campaign, which was hugely successful. But I haven't seen anything outside of that for the most part. So I don't know if you noticed any themes or anything you want to highlight for our listeners right now.
Okay, well, I've got a couple of thoughts, but full disclosure, I neither watched all of the Republican National Convention or the Democratic one, like you, very, very limited. I saw Senator Tim Scott's most of his speech, and I thought that was phenomenal. He told his story and just, you know, had a good message. But let me start with the Republican National Convention. They released their resolutions, their party platform for 2020, and I'll be honest, this might make some people upset, but I just thought it was really silly that they just decided to repeat their 2016 platform. I mean, obviously they have a strategy in that. They've probably thought long and hard, but essentially it's, we're going to keep promoting and supporting what President Trump did in 2016. And so to me, that kind of rings a little bit hollow, because that was 4 years ago. Things have changed. I mean, things have changed in the past 4 months. And so I think that there's a need for obviously us to tap into transcendent things in politics, or things that transcend, you know, just the next election. So I can see why a 2016 platform might still be relevant, but there's some new things that needed to be added. But I go to the Republican National Convention website, and they just have a resolution at the beginning of their platform. And then the rest of the PDF, which is like 80 something pages, is the Republican platform of 2016. So to me, that's kind of a sign of atrophy and an unwillingness to think innovatively. So that's my criticism there. Any thoughts before I go on to the Democratic one?
No, I mean, I get what you're saying. I feel like most voters won't pay attention to the platforms. I don't think they're that essential or important in terms of what happens. I get the frustration over Trump. Certainly there's many Republicans. I mean, there's a smattering dozens and dozens of Republicans who have either endorsed Biden or are signing on with the Biden campaign. Of course, Jeff Flake made news again, basically endorsing Biden, but didn't.
Oh, did he?
I didn't. Yeah, I mean, but then also wouldn't. Martha McCallum on Fox News did an interview with him, and I did see a clip of that, and she asked him, what do you agree with Biden on? And he couldn't answer. It was kind of funny to me. So, I mean, I think some of this stuff is personal, obviously, and I get it. I mean, Trump has been arrogant at times in terms of criticisms of people like Jeff Flake or John McCain, both from Arizona. So I get sort of the personal animosity going on, and Ted Cruz wasn't invited to address his convention because of his past comments about Trump. So maybe there was some punishment there. But I think, you know, this matters more to insiders, Brooke, people who are following the day-to-day stuff, not the average voter out there. So in the end, I don't think it'll matter much whether, you know, John Kasich, the former governor of Ohio, you know, says he's not going to vote for Trump or attacks Trump, blah, 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 or other Republicans kind of run with Biden here. But I don't think it'll matter in the end, because I think most people are going to pay attention to the issues and whether they think Trump's doing a good job or not, or whether Biden is up to the job, what have you. So I just don't think some of this inside the baseball stuff will matter. But, you know, I understand right. Your comments. I mean, the platform does play a role. I think one thing that I have noticed, and other people have pointed this out on social media, is Trump, to his credit, if you're a pro-life voter, if you think that life matters, he has been the strongest pro-life. This includes Ronald Reagan, too, is very good on their pro-life record. But it's been the strongest pro-life president of anybody ever. And he had a lot of pro-life speakers. Of course, Abby Johnson, the former president or at least executive director of a Planned Parenthood in Texas, got a prominent speaking role at the convention. That probably would have never happened under any other Republican candidate for president. And so it is interesting to see who I thought, you know, when Donald Trump was initially elected, I thought he was going to pivot to the middle or move to the left. Really hasn't. He's been a kind of consistent conservative outside of spending on most issues. And it'll be interesting to see how people will respond to that.
Conservative loosely. I mean, spending for sure. And then obviously tariffs, his approach to that has been very protectionist. But let me ask you this on the pro-life stuff. What do you see as the role of the executive when it comes to, I guess, advancing the pro-life cause? Where does the, what all does the executive account for on that front?
Yeah, I think one of the biggest thing is the bullet pulpit, is the president has the ability to sway public opinion. Of course, federal judges are a big issue because federal judges end up deciding a lot of abortion cases that come before the court. So Trump has a very solid record on appointing pro-life judges to the federal courts, not just the Supreme Court, but the federal courts. So I think that's a positive if you're a pro-life voter when you look at the Trump record. That's a big, big issue. But also just the bully pulpit. I mean, he's featuring pro-life speakers, pro-life individuals in administration. He's taken a very pro-life stance as president, which is interesting because he used to not be a pro-life guy when he was in business. I can't remember. I think he was tepidly more pro-choice. Of course, during his campaign, he said he came around to this issue. So he wasn't somebody who was always pro-life. But he was the first president, I believe, to address the Right to Life March, which happens every year in January. So his pro-life record is unprecedented as a commander in chief or as president of the United States.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. I am. I for one am grateful for the advance in public opinion of pro-life positions. I think we're starting to, and we have seen a shift on that front, and increasingly voters are more likely to say that they believe that abortions should not happen after the first trimester. And so I just think that we've definitely seen a lot of progress. So that part is certainly encouraging. But before we run out of time, I did want to cover two other quick things. Wait, we didn't say anything about the Democratic convention, though, real quick. So I did not watch the whole thing, but speaking of pro-life stuff, I thought this was rather interesting. There was a priest, what's his name? He's like
Tony Dolan's a cardinal in New York City. Yeah, cardinal.
No, but the priest that spoke at the Democratic National Convention, he issued a convocation or invocation.
Yeah, Tony Dolan, the cardinal.
No, it was not him. It was a different one. It really? Was James... It was the father that's like a social justice warrior.
Oh, yes. Father Martin. I don't remember his first name.
Father Martin.
He's been a thorn in the side of conservative Catholics for many years.
Right. Yeah. So definitely, like, if you're listening to this show, and all chances are that you're probably not going to agree with him on a lot of stuff. But he did mention the unborn in his prayer, which I thought was really interesting that aired in the Democratic National Convention. Another pastor closed his prayer in Jesus' name. And I just thought, man, that's so interesting. And granted, I think they're pandering to the Republicans that are never Trumpers right now, and some of those in the middle. But I just thought, man, like 10 years ago, 4 years ago, I'm not sure I would have heard anything like that in the Democratic National Convention, or maybe I wasn't listening. If you're a Democrat and you want to school me on this, go ahead and send me an email. But I just thought that was kind of interesting, too. Like, there's this what looks like a moderate element of the Democratic Party that was given some sort of voice there at the convention.
Yeah, you're exactly right. I was wrong, Brooke. Cardinal Timothy Dolan of New York City gave the invocation for the Republican National Convention in New York City. So you're right. I think it's James Martin. He has criticized the church to some degree and the culture. He's kind of been bent on a more pro-gay or homosexual narrative in the news. And he's kind of attacked, he's been a social justice warrior in the Catholic Church for many years. And, he's kind of thrown aside of traditional Catholics or maybe even a lot of Republicans. So you're exactly right on that. There have been other speakers. But you're right. I think that's an important highlight to notice because a lot of the pro-life Democrats have been silenced in recent years. Of course, I think it's William or maybe Bob Casey, who was a former senator from Pennsylvania, was an infamous pro-life Democrat. I worked for a pro-life Democrat. My first job out of college, I worked for Congressman Gene Taylor in Mississippi, who was a conservative Democrat, but he was also pro-life and he was Roman Catholic. So you've seen over the years kind of the silencing of the voices of the pro-life Democrats, and there's not too many left. There used to be a lot of House Democrats in the U.S. House who are pro-life, and there's just not many more. You know, maybe you can count them on one finger now, but there's very few now. And so that's important, I could think, thing to highlight in general. And honestly, I didn't see much of the Democratic convention, so I can't really comment too much. I know that some in the media praised them. And, you know, I think Ted Cruz made some comments and other Republicans made some comments. Mike Pence, of course, about the darkness, you know, the attacking of America. So there are these contrasts going on right now. You know, they said it was overly negative about America right now. But of course, we have a lot of problems, so that may resonate with some people. So it'll be interesting to see what happens, because these polls are tightening. Apparently, Trump's gaining some ground in the battleground states that are so important for this 2020 elections. So it'll be interesting to see, Brooke, how this tightens coming in the last. You know, people really don't, traditionally don't start paying attention to the election till after Labor Day. So it'll be interesting to see how much the polls tighten. Does Trump have a chance? Will there be this silent majority at the polls that emerges? I don't know. You know, your guess is probably as good as mine. And we'll see what happens. But it's you know, I kind of feel like culturally and just politically, we're in a holding pattern until this election happens, because I think a lot of things will change. Even the COVID response will change after the election. You know, my guess is the media will probably pay less attention to it if Biden's elected. But I don't know. We'll see. I mean, there's just so many things, I think, right now, from a policy standpoint, from a political standpoint, are just in a holding pattern until we have this election in November, Brooke.
Yeah, I think that's a safe guess, though, that there's so much politics mixed in with the genuine and legitimate pandemic concerns that it's hard to untangle them. And hopefully after the election, there will be some clarity on what was a legit concern and what is something that was just, you know, part of a political sort of strategy to create more conflict. So we will see. But I know all of us are kind of tired at this point in time. And so hopefully you're getting your rest right now, if you're listening, and enjoying your weekends with your families, maybe starting to get out a little bit more, maybe taking a trip or two. That would be wonderful. I think we're going to try to head to the beach this weekend just to get out of Raleigh for a bit. But Ray, do you have any other topics that you think we should address since we're running close out of time?
Well, I would just encourage everybody to go to nccivitas.org and check out some of our latest content, because we're covering a lot of state policy in North Carolina. And I know, you know, a lot of folks in North Carolina, it's harder for them because their local news is just not covering state government as much. So you can sign up for our newspaper at our website. You can read some of our latest content. We've got a piece up by Brian Balfour on the 10 takeaways from Cooper's spending proposal, which is his new budget proposal for North Carolina right now. We've got content on Skip Stam, who is a board member of Civitas, on criminal justice in North Carolina. We've got even content on agricultural policy, licensing reform, which is a big issue, and getting people back to work in the state. So we've just got a ton of stuff. I mean, whether it be crime and criminal justice, some of the topics we've already addressed today, we've got a ton of content on our website. We produce a lot of content at Civitas. So I'd just encourage people to go to our website, nccivitas.org. And if you have any extra change, consider donating to us so we can continue not only to produce content, but get our message across the state. You know, it's not just about politics. We've also covered some cultural stuff in North Carolina recently. Of course, Jaden Hooker, I wrote a short little piece about him, and just credit to Joe Bruno for promoting his story. So we've just got great stuff at nccivitas.org. So I'd encourage everybody to go there and just check it out, Brooke. I know you agree with that.
Yes, I do. Yes, I do. Absolutely. Tons of stuff. Also, check out our YouTube channel. I've been uploading some videos of some of our writers that have given a number of interviews over this pandemic and otherwise, as well as sign up for our poll lunch. Or actually, it's not a poll lunch. Just go around. It's like a poll happy hour. And it's going to be on September 23rd. And if you go to nccivitas.org/events, you can register for that. And we hope to see you there. But otherwise, you all have a wonderful week.
That's another online one, right?
Yes, it's all online.
It's completely free. You don't even have to pay the lunch charge to attend. So it's completely free. So make use of that and get some good insights to what's happening. It's not just only about politics, but there'll probably be some good examination of where our state's headed, why it's headed this way, and what to expect for 2020. So NCCivitas.org, it's all there. So thank you, Brooke, and thank you to our listeners who continue to be loyal and faithful by tuning into this podcast.
Have a wonderful week.